Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, May 22nd, 2024, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host, Bron Meniz, is in the other room because he's doing the stomach bug thing. He's getting over it, so we're kind of being separate until that goes away. So we're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can also email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprouts. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at FranStorchND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Right now, I have a knee that my medial knee was really sore on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday, Thursday through Sunday. It was sore. And I went to a conference. I went to the CNPA conference, the Connecticut Naturopathic Physicians Association conference, and we're going to do a redux on that today. And while I was there, it was sore. And so while I was there, the lovely Designs for Health rep, John, he happens to be a chiropractor, so I had him adjust my knee. It was still sore the next morning. And then on Saturday, I was able to get a very special infrared wand, and I used that on the inside of my knee, and it was still sore after that. I woke up on Sunday morning, and the pain in my medial knee was absolutely gone. I don't know if that's because of all the good care, but it made me so impressed with the infrared knee that I'm going to look into getting just a home infrared device for my knee that I can train it on the area and a wand so that I can use it in different parts of my body. I have some knee. So my medial knee, the inside of my knee, my right knee is fine now. The back of my knee feels a little off and I'm going to go see the chiropractor today. So that's good. And I'll have acupuncture on Friday. So that's going to help. And that's nice. I also have some menthol salve with CBD in it that I put on it. And I think that helps too. I have a tendon salve that I use and it has goldenrod and comfrey and rutagrabiolins in it. And I'm very happy with that salve. And I also put my magnesium oil on it. Magnesium oil that's more for calming muscles, but it can be helpful too. But what I need is tendon healing and I'm taking collagen as well. So I'm hoping I'll get out of it quickly. It made it so that I wasn't able to ride my bike on Sunday, although riding my bike on Sunday would have been dumb because I was tired and I had a lot of catch up to do. So it's okay that I didn't ride my bike on Sunday. Ron, poor Ron, he is back on his bike. It's hard for him, but he's getting through it. He's insisting on riding his bike in class and sort of suffering through it. And he rode his bike to the community center one day and he got through that as well. So he's actually progressing. So we're excited. This means that you can that you can get damaged by cholesterol lowering agents and come back from it. So we're very excited about that. And of course, he's doing all the different things that he's doing, the branched chain amino acids, the whey protein with, you know, amino acids in it and glutamine and the proteolytic enzymes to break down any drug that may be left, milk thistle to help him rebuild liver cells that don't have so many LDL receptors on them. All those things. So he's continuing to do that. He has a stomach bug right now. And so acute stomach bug. So he had it when I came home. So we separated. I'm not, he's kind of hanging out downstairs and I'm hanging out upstairs. So I don't get the bug. Stomach viruses, stomach gastroenteritis that's viral, is fecal, what we call fecal oral spread. So it's not spread by aerosol so much like COVID and like colds and flus and things like that. It's, so if he touches himself, he touches the surface, I touch the surface or I touch him, I can get virus on me and then I touch my face and then I get the virus. That's how it's spread. So it's not such a big deal for me to be in the same room as him. It's a big deal for me to be touching the same things that he's touching. So while he's sick, we separated. I had him, he considers himself not to be dairy intolerant, although I question it because I think it affects his sinuses. I'm having him drink kefir, nice organic kefir. I told him I would go get him some. What flavor would he like? He said, any flavor is fine. Plain is fine. Any flavor you would like. I said, okay, I'll get you peach. Not peach. So I got him strawberry. And I don't do so well with dairy ever since I have, you know, with my post-Maxine syndrome, I don't do great with dairy. So I got water kefir and water. It's agua de kefir. And that is made from prickly pear cactus. So I've been drinking that. I also found a brand of cashew-based kefir that feels more like regular kefir because it's creamy. And so I got that. It doesn't taste as good as real kefir, but it's still palatable. It's good. And it has all the, it has more cultures in it even than the agua de kefir. So I'm drinking that too to protect myself. And I've also taken grapeseed extract. We don't know if he has the norovirus. He didn't get upstairs stuff as much as downstairs. He has upstairs symptoms, but he never got sick. He got sick downstairs. So he has it. He's uncomfortable and he's tired, but he hasn't been super sick with it, which is good. And he's been able to eat a little bit. He's able to eat more now. I think he's coming out of it now. But I got him the kefir. If you have the actual norovirus, there are studies that show that it is killed by grapeseed extract, not grapefruit seed extract, but grapeseed extract. And so that's a nice thing to keep around. If there are stomach bugs that go through your house, as soon as you hear that anybody in your house has one, if they can tolerate it, you give it to them and you take it yourself. And you take a few, you can take a few hundred milligrams, check with your practitioner about that. But, and so the two big things are kefir and grapeseed extract. And if you can tolerate dairy, you can get regular kefir. If you are lactose intolerant, but you're not dairy protein intolerant, kefir is very low in lactose, so you may be able to tolerate it. And if you can't tolerate dairy protein, then you can choose to try aqua kefir and or also do a plant-based kefir, which is, and I'm doing both. I bought the aqua kefir and I've had it around because he had a stomach bug a little while ago too, which is a little concerning. While I was shopping, I saw that there was this cashew-based kefir. I was very excited. So I bought that. And of course, I tolerated just fine. And so I'll be having that until this is out of the house. So that's what's going on with us. I went to Florida and stayed with my mother, and that was wonderful. And I tolerated it. I didn't get shakes. I was very happy. The only thing that I have is I'm extra tired because I came back from Florida. I had a day to unpack and do the huge stack of charts. And then I had to go at one day of work, a short day of work, even though I still saw like 7 patients. And then I had to wrap up from that and go home. And then the next day I had to go to Southbury for the CNPA summit, which was very exciting. And the thing is, and then I had yesterday to, again, unpack and do charts. And so I'm not as well rested as I would like to be. I'm hoping today, later today, I'll get more rest because I'm pretty much back on the ground and this is a normal thing for me to do. And because I'm not going to sit in with Ron for bicycle talk, I have more time because I'm going to get right out of here and I'm going to go process my show and stuff like that. All right. So that's what's going on there. So maybe you want to hear what happened at the CNPA conference. It's always really nice to go. I felt like this one, I wasn't real keen on going because I was tired from having traveled and I didn't feel rested. And I had to travel to Southbury. And it's also the CNPA conference tends to happen in the spring. And it's during a time of year when it's the first few weekends of really nice weather, which kind of happened this year. There, it would have been nice to be outside, but what can you do? So I went, and then therefore I didn't ride my bike all weekend because yesterday I had to recover and just, you know, get stuff done. So, but in any case, so I wasn't expecting to enjoy myself as much as I did, and I enjoyed myself a lot. I was very happy, and I got to hang out with some great people. Notably, I sat next to Rick Leva, Enrico Leva, ND, who was a venerable naturopathic physician. He sold his practice and he sees the occasional patient. He founded Pure Encapsulations and he founded Vital Nutrients. And it was really cool to see him talking to the new owner of Vital Nutrients because she had never met him. And I joked it was like when Trevor Noah when Jon Stewart came on the Trevor Noah show and Trevor Noah said, Papa, because she got to meet the founder, the person that founded her company. So that was gratifying to see. It was gratifying to hang out with Rick Leva because we traded stories and information. And I felt like I'm really cool. I'm hanging out with Rick Leva. I'm talking, he's listening to me. We're sharing naturopathic information like we're colleagues. That's so cool because he was in practice for many, many years. And, you know, he was in practice for a good 15 years or 20 years more than I was when I started practicing. So I felt very honored to be able to hang out with him and share stories and be friendly with him and look at his granddaughter. And it was great. And then I saw my buddy, Gwen Rosenberg. We share that we had practiced previously at Natura Medica with Deirdre O'Connor and got to hear the stories of how she's, her practice is going forward. She's going to take on associates and she's doing great with EHR. And she has this product called Food Marble, which I'm interested in as well. It's something that is a home-based item that you purchase once and you can monitor your own gases, your own oral gases to see if you have SIBO, and you do it at home. You buy the thing once and then you have it and it monitors all these things based on you breathing into it. It's exciting. So I'm very interested in it and I think I'm going to start administering it. So you can do a diary. You have an app that goes along with it and you do a diary and you breathe into it and it gives you information about what's going on with your, just from your breath. It's so exciting. So that was really gratifying and interesting. It was just really great to reconnect with her. And we have plans to, at some point, get on a bike together. So that's great. And I saw my friend Lori Lee Schoenbeck, and I'll give you an update, either this talk or the next one. Lori Lee Schoenbeck, it was the first time I think I'd ever gone to a naturopathic conference and heard someone speak who I went through all 4 years with. It's somebody who was extremely familiar to me. When she saw me, she gave me a huge hug, and we talked about how I had sung this song at the No Talent show about phenol, which was awful to be around when we were in Gross Anatomy Lab. And she remembered that song, and that was hilarious. And we just reminisced about being at NCNM together. And she gave this wonderful talk about the origins of naturopathic medicine. And it was just a rehash of things that, you know, you don't always get to think about in your day to day. And so it was really great. It was really wonderful to see her as well. I've been collaborating with a naturopath named Dana Crete with a patient, and she's down in Guilford. And it was really funny because I was sitting, you know, in the lecture hall, and they were passing around the sign out, the sign-in sheet, and it was passed to me, and I saw that Dana Crete had signed two spots away from me. So that meant she was sitting two people away from me. So I yelled, Dana! And it was her. I said, hi, it's me, Fran. So we had never actually met. We'd only talked on the phone and texted. So it was really lovely to meet her as well. And then, you know, I got to see a lot of people that I usually see. I also did something interesting. I was talking with a colleague named Alice Bell, who's very nice. And she told me about how she has a SEP, self-employment plan, which is kind of an IRA that you deposit money into. And of course, it's tax deductible. And I don't have one. And they were talking about it at lunch. And I decided to leave the lunch. And she told me about this. And I said, I should really get a SEP. And I looked into my Acorns app, which is something that I use. And they had something called Acorns Later. And she said, that's a SEP. I said, okay. And with three or four clicks, I had a SEP. I was so excited. So think about that. If you're self-employed, you might want to get a SEP because you put money into it and you save it for your retirement and there's investments and you can, it's tax deductible. So that was kind of cool. All right. So here's some things that we talked about. I got to see the great Emily Diadamo. She comes from a legacy of incredible naturopathic physicians. So James Diadamo, and then his son, Peter Diadamo, and now Emily Diadamo. And it was lovely to meet her because she's a lovely person. And she talked about inflammatory bowel disease, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis. So there were a few pearls that I got from Miss Emily, and one of them was that if you're taking while you're taking steroids for inflammatory bowel disease, whether you have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis, you can take a high dose of N-acetylcysteine with that, and that will help you with detoxification and help to calm your liver, and it'll help to calm the effects of the steroids. I mean, you'll get your steroid effect, but it helps as well. She talked about that there's so many biologics that you can take. And of course, in naturopathic medicine, if people don't want to take drugs, we try to help them without drugs. But if you have to take a drug, she talked about how vedolizumab, which is a monoclonal antibody, it's a biologic. She feels that that's the safest biologic because it doesn't block cytokines. So things that block cytokines can give you all kinds of side effects and make it so that you can't fight infections as easily. So what vedolizumab does, it prevents leukocytes, white blood cells, from traveling into your gut. So when you have too many white blood cells in your gut, it makes it so that you get more inflammation in your gut. So it blocks the inflammation, and you have it's very gut specific too. That's so it has less side effects. She talked about the convenience of taking tofacitinib, which is a tyrosine kinase inhibitor. It's a JAK inhibitor. I forget what JAK stands for. It's JAK. And what's nice about the thing is that a lot of these biologics are infusions. So you have to go somewhere and get infused. You have to get an IV and then they put it into your body. And the tofacitinib is nice because the pill, take a pill every day. And a lot of people like that. When you are doing, so she comes from a line of people who believe in genotyping and blood typing, and not just the blood type, but your kappa and rho and your M and N and your secretor non-secretor status, and whether your rho your negative or positive, so whether you so you test all of those things. And when they were doing the blood type diet stuff, depending on all of those parameters, you would get a diet that was assigned to you. And I told Emily that I was A negative. She said, "So am I." I thought that was really cool that the lineage of the Diadamos, I have the same blood type as Emily Diadamo. It was kind of cool. And so she talked about non-secretors. Most people are secretors statistically. So secretors mean that you secrete your blood type antigens, and non-secretors you don't. And so if you're a non-secretor, you have a hard time creating a good microbiome, and you make more pathogenic biofilms. So that can be problematic, and you're more likely to get inflammatory bowel disease. She talked about the use of mannose. D-mannose is something that we use. The neat thing about D-mannose, it's a sugar that is anti-adhesive. So you can use it. I always think of using it for people who get recurrent urinary tract infections. So you definitely can use it for that because it's poorly absorbed, which is what you want. So it's going to wind up in your it's going to wind up in your bladder and your urinary tract, and it's going to wind up in your gut. So what's nice is so you're not going to really absorb it. And when it winds up there, it is anti-adhesive. So it makes it so that you're less likely to make icky biofilms from bacteria that are causing inflammation in your gut. And bad bacteria are just not going to stick to the inside of your gut. They will also, by the way, it doesn't matter. I mean, just because you're taking it for inflammatory bowel disease doesn't mean that it's also not going to protect your urinary tract. So if you happen to be prone to urinary tract infections and you have inflammatory bowel disease, it's doing double duty. If you don't have inflammatory bowel disease and you do get a lot of urinary tract infections, D-mannose is something to consider. I recommend it to people frequently who have urinary tract infections, a lot of them. All right, and then there's rifaximin, which is that is the antibiotic that's frequently given to people who have SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth. Rifaximin is shown to decrease the virulence of Crohn's disease and associated inherent invasive E. coli adhesion with exposure, which is worse with exposure to maltodextrin. So if you have inflammatory bowel disease, you want to avoid maltodextrin. So you have to check labels and make sure it's, so even supplements can have maltodextrin in them. So you don't want to take any supplement with maltodextrin. You don't want to eat any food with maltodextrin in it. And so rifaximin So you can take a course of rifaximin if you have Crohn's or ulcerative colitis. It might help your symptoms. And so the endoplasmic reticulum, which is the the lining of the colon, is stressed, and so that's what you want to treat. The mucin lining, which is the nice mucus that protects your digestive system, you can protect it by using vaccinium species. Vaccinium is blueberries, bilberry, things like that, myrtle, any of the vaccinium species. Actually, vaccinium also includes cranberries and what we call Newfoundland partridgeberry, Vaccinium vitis ideus, which down here is called lingonberry. It's got different names, but it's Vaccinium macrocarpens is cranberry and Vaccinium vitis ideus, Newfoundland's partridgeberry, and it's different, called different things, different places. And it's tastes similar to a cranberry. It's slightly less tart, and, you know, in partridgeberry season up in Newfoundland, you get partridgeberry everything, partridgeberry jam, partridgeberry muffins, even at Tim Hortons, it's great. She also uses 2-FL, which is 2-fucosylactose, which is a fucosin, a sugar that is contained in fucus, in kelp, and it can help to heal the mucin lining as well. Zinc and glycosaminoglycans. And glycosaminoglycans include glucosamine sulfate and also include N-acetylglucosamine. For the gut, we usually use N-acetylglucosamine, which can help to rebuild the gut lining. And then PHGG, it's polyhydrogenated guar gum, hydrosylated guar gum, so that can help too. There's something called BPC-157, body protective compound for ulcer healing. And then there's butyrate, which comes in supplements and is in butter. And that butyrate is something that we frequently use to heal the digestive system. And then there's an inflammatory cycle that called NLRP3, and you can inhibit that with melatonin, curcumin, tocotrienols, and DHA. DHA is dihydrocosahexaenoic acid, which is one of your essential fatty acids. Tocotrienols are an active form of vitamin E. You can give immune globulins in higher doses. Another thing that was interesting is hyperbaric oxygen therapy. So we talked about hyperbaric oxygen therapy for inflammatory bowel disease. We also talked about it for cancer. And it's such a simple thing because it's non-invasive. You do have to sit in a hyperbaric oxygen chamber to do it. And what you're doing is you're getting a high level of oxygen. You get an oxygen mask on and they put they give you a high percentage of oxygen while you're in a pressurized chamber. It's very interesting. And you get to lie in there for a certain amount of time. And if the person has you have to go somewhere where they have a chamber. You can get hyperbaric oxygen chambers for your home. And you can also get live O2 for your home, which helps you. You can get high dose oxygen. And hyperbaric oxygen in inflammatory bowel disease can lower calprotectin, which is a marker of inflammation. It can reduce rectal bleeding, your stool frequency score, because people with inflammatory bowel disease tend to go to the bathroom a lot, and also the Mayo endoplasmic relapse score. You want to make sure you optimize vitamin D in people with inflammatory bowel disease. And the other thing that's a nice thing that you could use is black tea. Black tea has tannins. If you tolerate the caffeine, the tannins in black tea are astringent, so they're going to help to suck out inflammation, and tannins will also kill unfriendly bacteria that are in your gut. So that was nice. So then there was the lovely Frank Song. He was, I'm sorry, I hope I don't embarrass you. Frank Song was adorable. He was this beautiful man. He was really tall and Asian, and he had really long dark hair and just the most beautiful bubbly personality. He was just so lovely. I just enjoyed watching him and interacting with him. He's just a really nice guy. And then I asked him a question and he didn't have the answer off the top of his head. And then after his talk, he ran up to me with the answer to the question. I was just really so appreciative of that. So he was super adorable. Anyway, so he talked about all of the reasons why tick-borne illness is so prevalent now, including things like climate change and environmental toxins and stress and all those things. One of the things he did talk about was assembling a tick bite kit, something you can have in your home. that you might want to keep around. So in your tick bite kit, and this was recommended by Alex Chesney, who treats Lyme disease. I think she's in either Vermont or New Hampshire. I forget. But anyway, he was quoting her kit. One of the things you put in is serrapeptase, and serrapeptase is an enzyme, a proteolytic enzyme, that will help you break down biofilms. And biofilms are particularly important in actual Lyme disease. They're all the co-infections, but serrapeptase will help to break down biofilms. So you put that in your kit, and then you have a tincture of Japanese knotweed, cryptolepis, hotunia, and cat's claw. Those are some really good basic Lyme treaters. And mind you, Japanese knotweed is really helpful for a bunch of things. It's helpful for Bartonella. It's helpful for Babesia. For pretty much any tick-borne illness you have, it's helpful. I like Japanese knotweed a lot for Bartonella because Bartonella likes to stick to the endothelium, the inside of your blood vessels. And Japanese knotweed has resveratrol in it, which strengthens the inside of your blood vessels. So those are four really heavy hitters for Lyme disease. So you can take that tincture as soon as you get bitten and take it for a while. He recommends something called Cedarside, which is a topical tick repellent. I'm presuming it has cedar essential oil in it. The Otom Tick Twister. So it's a tick twister. It's a device that you grab onto the tick and you twist it out, and it efficiently pulls the tick out of you. You can get a tick species ID card with it, and then you can use Andrographis topically. So not just take, Andrographis has sort of fallen out of favor in heavy use because a lot of people get allergies to it. Not everybody does, and if you don't, you can take Andrographis early, but Andrographis is something you can put directly on the tick bite, and it'll help to scare away spirochetes if they're there. And that you can give handouts along with it. And you can also get Tick Report. You can do a Tick Report. There's a company called tickreport.com, and you can send your tick to this company and they will test the tick to see what diseases are in it. So I raised my hand and I said, "You haven't talked about Bartonella as a tick-borne illness." He didn't mention it. And I said, "Why didn't you mention Bartonella?" And he said, I said, "If you think it's not transmitted by ticks, how is it transmitted?" And he said to me that he had interacted with some researchers who told him that they are not finding Bartonella in ticks, that they're actually testing ticks and they're just not seeing it in ticks. So that's very interesting to me. So did I get my Bartonella from a tick? It's possible that I did not. So how the heck did I get it? Was I interacting with an animal and I got bitten by a flea? It is flea-borne. How Bartonella is generally transmitted is that Bartonella is in the fleas. The animals get the Bartonella into them through fleas, and then Bartonella comes out in the feces, particularly of cats. And then cats, when they're done pooping, they scratch their poop, and now they have poop in their claws, and the Bartonella can stay in their claws. And so if they scratch you, you can get Bartonella that way. That's why they call it cat scratch disease. You get bitten by a flea, you can get Bartonella that way. I don't know if I interacted with an animal. It's certainly possible because I'm always mugging people's dogs and cats. When I see dogs at the farmer's market, I'm the first one to go, "Please let me pet your dog." So I certainly could have gotten it that way. And I could have gotten, I wonder too, if this is something I have to look up to see if mosquitoes are a vector for Bartonella, because if a mosquito bites a cat and then bites me, could have passed Bartonella to me. I don't know. I have to look into that. But anyway, I had antibodies to Bartonella. I've been treating for it. And Mariah Hinchy suspects that my tremors have been a result of Bartonella. By the way, my tremors have been doing really, really well. I still have the post-exertional malaise problem, and it's not horrible. It's like, I just really need to rest. If I get rest, then I don't have so much malaise. But my tremors have been really good. Like, I haven't had any since early April, and it's already late May, so that's good. And knock on wood. Yeah. So anyway, so I appreciated that. And so I asked him, "Do you have some favorite herbs for Bartonella?" And he mentioned, too, that I have not been taking, and they were Alcornea and Bidens. Yes, there is an herb called Bidens pilosa. all hail to the chief, right? And it's a lovely herb. It does go after Bartonella. I knew about it from Lindsay Wells, who also spoke, and she spoke about helminths, the use of helminths for autism and other developmental disorders. Very interesting. I'll tell you about that in a bit. But Bidens pilosa is a pretty little flower. I believe it is a compositae. No, it's not compositae. It's Asteraceae. It looks like a little daisy, and it fights Bartonella. So does Alcornea. That's one of the herbs that is described by Buhner. And, of course, good old Japanese knotweed. And Japanese knotweed you would expect because of the resveratrol content and because it strengthens the endothelium, the lining of the inside of your blood vessels. And so you would expect that would be useful for so many things. All right. So the next person that spoke was Corinne Verano. And I saw where she practiced. I'm like, ah, really? So she's at Roots Natural Healing, and Roots Natural Healing is at Crossroads in Columbia. So she's my neighbor. I send people to Crossroads all the time to get physical therapy. And I have patients who go to Crossroads anyway. And they, I have to sign off on forms from Crossroads. I'm doing it almost every day. I'm signing off on somebody's PT at Crossroads, which is great. And she's very interesting because she's a nurse practitioner as well as a naturopathic doctor. And she focuses on naturopathic oncology care. So she talked about considerations for all kinds of things. When somebody has cancer, you want to treat them for other conditions around that, like do they have mold toxicity? Do they have heavy metals? Do they have environmental toxins? Do they have genetic variants? Do they have chronic viral infections? Do they have gastrointestinal infections? Do they have tick-borne illness? So you want to know all these things. And one of the things that can cover, I don't think she talked about it, but one of the things that can cover all of those conditions, if you don't want to do a whole lot of testing, which some people may not be able to afford to do, is just give them modified citrus pectin, because modified citrus pectin will cover pretty much all of these environmental toxins, heavy metals, mold, viral infections. It's what it does is it lowers galectin 3, and galectin 3 will rise if you have a lot of inflammation. And galectin and modified citrus pectin also is thought to help to prevent metastasis. So anyway, modified citrus pectin can be helpful. She didn't talk about that, but I am just telling you now. And she talked about the importance of the ketogenic diet. That can be helpful. It's high fat and low protein and low carbohydrates. And what it does for you is it reduces circulating glucose for rapid tumor growth. And so when you reduce your circulating glucose, the cancer doesn't have enough to eat. So the cancer cells are more likely to die. Cancer cells depend on glucose for energy and have defects in ketone body metabolism. However, she is not a fan of fasting because, you know, what fasting can produce reactive oxygen species, which can go after cancer cells. But she doesn't believe in it because it's too stressful. And I'm not a fan of fasting either for that reason. I mean, I have women, especially for women, it's not indicated. All the studies on intermittent fasting were done on young men. And so postmenopausal women who want to lose weight, I don't think intermittent fasting. Now, if you're doing it and you're fantastic and you're loving it, that's fine. But we don't generally recommend it because it's too stressful. Your body is stressed by being in a fasted state. And so you need to eat when you're hungry and not eat when you're not, and eat more when you get a lot of exercise and eat less when you don't. That's mostly what I recommend. So she also talks about eating higher protein because you need the protein for physical repair and lower carbohydrate. And she's not excited about vegetarian diets. She thinks that vegetarian diets is very interesting. So some of you are going to come at me, but she thinks that vegetarian diets, that the research bears out that they're associated with higher incidences of cancer, allergies, and mental health issues. It's kind of what I've observed too, but, if somebody comes in and they are somebody comes in and they're vegetarian and they're happy with it and they refuse to eat meat or they're just grossed out by it, what am I going to do? Then this idea that antioxidants interfere with chemotherapy, it's not supported by research. Boy, I've been saying that since I've been in practice. I mean, years and years ago, maybe 25, 30 years ago, I saw the study by Davis Lamson, who went through all of the antioxidants and showed that how they helped with cancer therapies and how they were even synergistic with certain chemotherapies and radiation. So I'm on board with that, that, you know, your oncologist will tell you that don't take antioxidants because they'll interfere with chemotherapy treatment. They'll make it so that the chemotherapy treatment doesn't work. That's not supported by research. And my patients tend to do better if they are taking antioxidants while they're having chemotherapy. There are specific agents that help with specific kinds of cancers. Quercetin is helpful for osteosarcoma. It reduces cell migration and invasion, and it reduces HIF-1 alpha, VEGF, the vascular endothelial growth factor, and metalloproteinase 2 and 9. And anyway, quercetin is indicated in osteosarcoma. Chinese skullcap is also indicated in osteosarcoma. Such a helpful herb, and bakelins are the extracts of Chinese skullcap. For lymphoma specifically, you go after Andrographis and borage. And then leukemia, you go after Boswellia, which is cytotoxic, and cytostatic and apoptotic, which apoptosis is the destruction of cells, cellular death. So you want to kill your cancer cell. Boswellia helps with the differentiation and apoptosis of leukemia cells. So what that means is when you have a cancer cell, it's what's called dedifferentiated. Dedifferentiation means that your cells are, every cell in your body is differentiated into a certain kind of tissue. And so, you know, my skin cells are differentiated into Fran skin cells. If my skin cells go towards being cancer, so say I have, God forbid, a basal cell or a squamous cell carcinoma, my skin cells are de-differentiating away from normal skin cells into a cancer cell. So you want to take a leukemia cell. Leukemia cell is an unhealthy white blood cell, and Boswellia will encourage that white blood cell not to de-differentiate, to stay differentiated into a normal white blood cell, a normal leukocyte white blood cell, right? And so, if you won't de-differentiate, we'll kill you. So that's the apoptosis. There's a chirping bird outside my window. I'm not sure if that's a cardinal or a goldfinch. We're just really enjoying the birds on the bird feeder right now. This is a great time of year to see all kinds of birds. Also get your Merlin app out and you can find out what's in your yard just from listening to it. I have to listen tonight, see if the American woodcock is still out there. He's hilarious. Oh my goodness. The American woodcock is making it, he's going viral because they do this bobbing dance and people play music to the videos and he bobs back and forth. And they're bobbing back and forth because they think it's because they're looking for worms, that they move the ground when they make that bobbing motion and they can sense the worms when they do that. Hilarious. Okay. But this bird is just chipping away outside my window. Okay, it's that time of year. All right, what else can you do? High-dose vitamin C. When you do vitamin C over certain doses, it's no longer antioxidant, but it is synergistic with chemotherapy. So Linus Pauling had a point. So there are clinics that do 50, 75, or 100 grams of vitamin C in a dose. So you get an IV. Anything over 50 grams has the same effects, and she doesn't go over that unless there's research that says that you need it. And so, for example, for pancreatic cancer, you can give 75 grams twice a week. But she will generally offer weekly with most cancers, but it depends on the cancer type. Osteosarcoma, she, for example, you do 100 grams three times a week. And then guess what? Here's our second talk where we're all about the hyperbaric oxygen therapy. So hyperbaric oxygen therapy increases the effectiveness of radiation therapy and significantly reduces tumor growth. Then there's infrared sauna. High temperatures will attack weaker cells, and which are controlled by heat shock protein 70A. So infrared saunas can be helpful. And The thing with infrared sauna is you can go somewhere and get into an infrared sauna. You pay some money and go into an infrared sauna. You can also buy infrared saunas relatively cheaply online and have them in your house. And that's not a bad thing to have. An infrared sauna is something that kills Lyme. It's good for tick-borne illness, too. It'll kill weaker cells, and it will kill spirochetes and other tick-borne illnesses. Infrared sauna also encourages detoxification. Saunas tend to increase phase one liver detox, so they're helpful for that. They, of course, enhance immune function, increase your vascular and lymphatic circulation. So what I like about hyperbaric oxygen therapy and infrared sauna is they're non-invasive. They're just oxygen. You're lying in a chamber and getting oxygen. And with infrared sauna, you can have one in your house, and it's nice and warm. It's a soothing warmth. If you ever get a chance to try an infrared sauna, let me recommend it to you. It's something that it'd be lovely to try, because it's a warmth that penetrates into you, and it just calms you down, and it's soothing. Unless you're really heat intolerant, you might not like it, but it gently warms you up. And you know, if it's a really hot day, you might not be interested in it. But if it's not a really hot day, it's a really nice thing to try. Guess what? Acupuncture is helpful for cancer. Surprise, surprise. And it can be electroacupuncture, and it can be straight up needle acupuncture. It improves your quality of life. It can help to relieve chemotherapy, nausea and vomiting, dry mouth, hot flashes. And then there's homeopathy. You can use all kinds of homeopathy, various homeopathic remedies. And the nice thing about homeopathy, you can always give another homeopathic remedy. It really makes your patients feel like you're not giving up on them. And if the homeopathy works, great. And if it doesn't work, try something else. All right. So that's it for Corrine. And Corrine is so local. She lives around here. We talked about getting together as well. It was lovely to meet her as well. And so big shout out to her for giving such a great talk. Then we had Patrick Fratelloni, MD, who practices in New York City. I think he's associated with Mount Sinai Hospital, and he oversees, I believe Patrick Fratelloni is he's the MD that oversees Corrine. Anyway, he must have taught at Bridgeport, because a whole bunch of people at the conference went up and hugged him and were really excited to see him. And he's really cool. So he talked about a lot of different herbs that are cardiovascular agents. And it made me wonder if, when I took that, remember I told you a couple weeks ago, I took olmesartan, which is an angiotensin receptor antagonist. And after the second night of taking it, I almost passed out. Well, I'm taking a lot of cardiovascularly active herbs, including motherwort and hawthorn. And I may have had a synergistic effect with that drug. I take a little bit of hawthorn every day. I take motherwort every day. And I have hibiscus in my Tulsi tea. I don't take hibiscus every day, but if the box of Tulsi has hibiscus in it, I'm getting hibiscus in. So a lot of these herbs I take all the time. Hawthorn and motherwort I take every day, and hibiscus I take sometimes. So motherwort and hawthorn both have beta blocker activity, which means that they put you into more parasympathetic tone and calm you down. And hibiscus actually has ACE inhibitor, acetylcholinesterase. It's true. ACA stands for acetylcholinesterase. It also stands for angiotensin converting enzyme, and that's what it is in this case. So it has angiotensin converting enzyme inhibitors and activity. And what that does is there's the renin-angiotensin cycle in your kidneys. Renin gets converted to angiotensin 1, which gets converted by enzymes to angiotensin 2, which gets converted to aldosterone. And aldosterone's job is to help you to retain sodium and therefore water in your body. And so if you block anywhere along that pathway, you're going to lose more water, and it's going to bring your blood pressure down. So you lose more salt and you lose more water, and your blood pressure goes down. So that's how that works. So ACE inhibitors and angiotensin receptor antagonists, like anything that ends in sartan, that is the pathway that is affected. and hibiscus has ACE inhibitor activity. Hawthorn can be used for hypertension, cardiovascular disease, meaning blockages in the coronary arteries, can be used for congestive heart failure, for rhythm, abnormal rhythms. It's a negative chronotroph, which means it slows your heart rate down. It's vasodilatory, increases your vasodilation, which is, again, going to lower your blood pressure. It improves endothelial function, so the inside of your blood vessels are going to work better. They're going to be more elastic. It protects the myocardium, your heart muscle, against ischemia and reperfusion. So you're less likely to have bad effects if you have a heart attack, you're less likely to have a heart attack. The flavonoids improve the integrity of the blood vessels. It can decrease your diastolic blood pressure, and so it calms you down, increases nitric oxide, so your blood vessels are going to be more elastic. It reduces endothelial inflammation. So endothelial inflammation is the lining of your blood vessels. If they become inflamed, you're going to be more likely to get atherosclerosis. It lowers your chances of sudden cardiac death with congestive heart failure and in an ejection fraction that's greater than 25%. So it can help to reduce lipids and arrhythmias. So it's going to reduce lipids. If it's reducing endothelial inflammation, it's going to tend to reduce lipids because you're going to have less need to repair the inside of your blood vessels. Motherwort is used for hypertension and arrhythmia. It's used for cardiovascular disease and therefore lowering lipids. Motherwort is also an estrogen tonic. It can help with postpartum bleeding and amenorrhea, and it's something you use in menopause. What's nice about motherwort is a nervine. It's not just used for cardiovascular. You can give it to a child who's anxious. It's a very benign herb, and it grows like crazy in over at Tobacco Road Farms, because Amy always makes me motherwort tincture. And I'm so grateful to her for doing that, because I love the motherwort. Because Amy gives it to me, I take the motherwort every day. And motherwort is indicated in Lyme disease because Lyme disease is cardiotoxic and it can give you arrhythmias. So I take it for that, and I also take it to calm me down. It's perfect for me because it helps my anxiety and it helps me to have any, between the long back syndrome and the tick-borne illness, there's a lot of reasons to use it. So it's great. Motherwort lowers blood pressure, slows atherosclerotic plaque production. It's antiplatelet aggregating, so it'll thin your blood. It relaxes your blood vessels. It protects against lipid peroxidation. So it'll actually, if you have lipids going around your LDL and your HDL, it'll prevent it from oxidizing. So oxidized LDL is more likely to damage the inside of your blood vessels and cause atherosclerotic plaques. The lipid lowering is supposedly similar to atorvastatin. That's a big deal. It tends to decrease your blood viscosity. We already said it's antiplatelet aggregation, so it's going to do that. And it's going to lower fibrinogen volume, so it can help with arrhythmias. You can also use it for palpitations when people are hyperthyroid. So it's really nice, versatile herb. Then there's Dong Quai. One thing I'm not taking, it lowers pulmonary hypertension in general. It helps with fibrillation. So if you have atrial fibrillation, Dong Quai is something you can use. It helps with cardiovascular disease. You can use Dong Quai for ulcerative colitis as well. And it's also used for perimenopausal symptoms because it does have activity in the hormonal realm. Helps with cerebrovascular insufficiency. So if somebody is tending to strokes or if they're having memory issues, it's something you can use. And it helps with hypertension, and it helps with angiotensin II antagonistic activity, prevents atrial fibrillation. It reduces ischemic myocardial injury. So if you have angina, it can be helpful for that. And it improves your coronary blood flow. So that's great. You can use astragalus and Korean ginseng if you tolerate those. Those reduce angina, improve your left ventricular function, and you can combine them with goji. And goji berries are something that I eat somewhat regularly, not every day, but I have them around, and I'm a big fan of them. I like to use them in my oatmeal instead of raisins. And they're lovely. They are little tiny berries. You usually get them dried, and they taste good. and they'll rehydrate if you put them in your oatmeal. You can snack on them like you would snack on raisins, throw them in your trail mix, and you can sprinkle them on other fruit and put them in your yogurt and things like that. And they have wonderful flavonoids and antioxidants. You can use tribulus. I think of tribulus as something to help men with sex drive, but it doesn't raise testosterone. It's something we talked about. So tribulus helps with high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, lipids, also helps with sexual dysfunction, as we said. It also happens to be helpful for IBS, for inflammatory or irritable bowel syndrome, and with diabetes. So that's a nice one. It's also it has ACE inhibitory effects. And potassium sparing diuretic effects, and it tends to lower blood pressure. It's been studied in rodents. It's protective against ischemia and dilates your coronary arteries, and it lowers your triglycerides and total cholesterol. So tribulus can be really nice, especially if you have a guy who's got cardiovascular disease. Nice thing to take. It also lowers blood pressure and helps with angina, which is chest pain that you get from coronary artery disease. Lowers your total cholesterol, LDL, and your blood sugar. So some herbs you may not have thought of to use for hypertension. Andrographis, again, beware of andrographis because it can, if you have an allergy to it, you can take it, but if you don't, it can be helpful. Bilberry, one of the vacciniums. So bilberry, of course, is going to be strengthening to your blood vessels. Coleus, which is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. I think of coleus. Coleus can be used for psoriasis. Whether you have psoriasis, you can use topical coleus on psoriasis patches, and you can also take coleus for psoriatic arthritis and the general inflammation of psoriasis. But it can help with hypertension too. And then panax ginseng, it depends on the person, because I tend not to take it because it's stimulating. And I was taking Eleuthero and I stopped because I was concerned it was going to raise my blood pressure. So I'm on the fence about it because I really love panax or Eleuthero. Used to be known as Siberian ginseng. It has some properties similar to ginseng, but so as not to confuse it with panax and Panax kingfolius, which is American ginseng. They changed the name of it, so now it's just called Eleuthero. Dong Quai, hawthorn, rhodiola, and skullcap can all help to protect against atherosclerosis. And when this says skullcap, I am not sure. It just says skullcap here, so I don't know if that means Chinese or, Scutellaria lateriflora, which is the, that's the nervine. I'm going to guess it's Chinese because the bakelins are amazingly anti-inflammatory. You think of Chinese skullcap as more of an anti-inflammatory herb, and you think of Scutellaria lateriflora, which we just call skullcap, as a nervine. So if you're thinking about atherosclerosis, I would go with the Chinese skullcap. For congestive heart failure, you can use hawthorn, panax, and schisandra. And he talked at length about foxglove. I'm nervous to use foxglove because, it can be it has a narrow window of effectiveness. And there's so many more benign herbs that you can use. He talked about the use of cactus. And I was sitting with Rick and he said, what did he say? Catnip? I said, no, not catnip. Cactus, like saguaro cactus. And I made my arms do a cactus shape. And I said, cactus, it's a wonderful plant. And that's what he said. It's very benign. It's easily tolerated. You can drink cactus water. You can buy cactus water and drink it like you would drink coconut water. They make cactus water too. And it's rich in minerals. It's very benign. I mean, obviously, cactus, if you touch a cactus, you can get stung. But I mean, you get the spines. But once you get inside it, it's very nutritious. And various kinds of cactuses are eaten by indigenous people where the cactus grows. And cactus, saguaro cactus, which is Cactus grandiflora, that's the great big cactus that you think of in Charlie Brown when he's with Spike and when you see Bugs Bunny and the Roadrunner. Those great big, and when you go to Las Vegas and when you go to Arizona and New Mexico, you will see the saguaro cactus. They're everywhere. And that plant is a lovely, wonderful plant it's something to take if you have cardiovascular issues. It helps to lower blood pressure. And people tend to respond to it very easily. Motherwort and hawthorn, of course, are also helpful. If you have arrhythmias, dunquai, hawthorn, motherwort, and lemon balm, which is a nervine, helps with arrhythmias. How wonderful is that? And then for, let's see, for if you have vascular issues, there's horse chestnut, number three, the horse chestnut. Yay, that's a Monty Python reference. Anyway, horse chestnut is a wonderful astringent, and it can help to calm down, like if you have varicose veins. Horse chestnut, either topically or orally, can help to calm down your varicose veins. And you could have the varicose veins in your legs, and you could have the varicose veins in your bum. So if you have hemorrhoids, topical horse chestnut is very helpful. And I have salves that have horse chestnut in them we like to use. But horse chestnut, butcher's broom, stone root, collinsonia. Those are all good for hemorrhoids. And you can take them internally, and you can use them topically. And so if you have saggy blood vessels anywhere, horse chestnut can be helpful. Horse chestnut happens to also be helpful for asthma. And then for lipid lowering, you can use aloe, bilberry, elder, which I take every day, Tulsi, which I drink every day. And my lipids are pretty good. I have high LDL. My LDL is running in the 150s, but my HDL is very high at 80, and my triglycerides are low at 65. What I haven't done is tested my fractionation to see if I have large buoyant. And last time I did, I did. But and then lemon balm and turmeric and yarrow. I take most of these, so that's really good. Interestingly, we talked about all these medicines that you can take to help your cardiovascular health, and somebody asked Dr. Frataloni if he thought the heart was more for spiritual purposes or is it just a blood pump. He said he thinks the main purpose of the heart is spiritual. Go figure. Isn't that interesting? So nourish your heart in any way. Don't just nourish it with medicines and food, but nourish it in go out and love people and be helpful in your relationships, volunteer, and also get rest and be kind to yourself and do things that are good for you and your spiritual well-being. Well, that's all I have time for today. I'll pick up next week with Lindsay and Helmans, and then we'll talk about Lori Lee's talk, which was so inspiring. And this may take a few visits to get through all of this, because this was just a really terrific conference, and I learned a lot, and it was unexpected that I would enjoy it as much as I did. Nothing against the conference. I'm just, overwhelmed and tired. You have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician. My co-host Ron Meniza is in the other room. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to this show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, and Spotify. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live and Instagram Live episode at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM, WHUS stores, and WHUS.org.